Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. Despite the rain this week, we remain at a level 2 significant drought for the South Coast, Cape, and Islands. According to the state, the designation follows 2 years of below average rainfall and declining stream flow and groundwater across the state, signaling worsening drought conditions and increasing stress on local water resources. Today, we talk about the drought from several angles. What are the weather patterns contributing to the lack of precipitation? How are towns monitoring water supply, and what kinds of water restrictions are in place? We'll also discuss the potential for wildfire and steps we can take to reduce wildfire risk. Joining us, Chris Glonginger. He's meteorologist and senior scientist at the Woods Hole Group. Hi, Chris. Are you there, Chris?
Yes, I am, Mindy.
Okay. Yep. John Burke, fire chief in Sandwich. Hi, Chief Burke.
Good morning, Mindy.
Kelly Calliope's communications manager at the Barnesville Department of Public Works. Good morning, Kelly.
Good morning, Mindy.
All right, Chris, we just had some heavy rain. I measured 5.5 inches in my backyard, and I'm sure there are people going, yay, that means the drought is over. But it does not mean the drought is over, right?
You're right. And I think that is the elephant in the room. And that's the issue when you have warmer air masses that hold more moisture, because it all comes at once. You know, for the Cape, we usually see anywhere from 40 to 50 inches of rain or rain snow over the course of the year. But if a good portion of that falls all at once, that really doesn't do a whole heck of a lot in helping us dig our way out of this drought. And that's one of the issues we're seeing now. And in a changing climate, we get a higher frequency of these higher impact rain events that aren't really spread out through the year. And what happens is with drought and heat, the top layer of the soil essentially burns, and it prevents the rain from permeating into the ground. And most of what you saw was running often into the streets and into the stormwater systems. A perfect example, if you saw the viral video from Nantucket, the water cascading down the cobbled streets and right into the storm drains. So that's the issue with the rain that we've seen the last 24 hours.
Yeah, the ground is just so dry. I know, even looking outside our windows here, you know, right next, it's the woods, and it looked like a little pond had formed because the ground just couldn't seem to absorb all that water coming down at once. Chief, I'm wondering if this also is having the rain that we had, does it have an impact on the fire risk, or is it are we still at that higher risk for fire, wildfire as well?
Yeah, we're still at that higher risk. There's a minimal impact temporarily with the rain and absorbing into the ground, but we are still at that level 2 wildfire risk that we have to pay attention to.
Yeah. So Chris, talk a little bit about, you know, this is the second year of drought. So looking back at this last year, what changes in weather patterns contributed to this reduction in rainfall?
When you get into these patterns of extensive dry periods, research actually being done at Woodwell Climate Research Center right in Falmouth has found...
I think Chris is digitizing a little bit. Maybe we want to get Chris on the phone instead of Zoom to see if we can get a better connection. Let me go to Kelly, and we'll talk a little bit about how the drought is impacting our water sources. Cape Cod is fortunate to have an aquifer that, according to the Cape Cod Commission, is recharged solely by precipitation. Kelly, how do towns, including Barnstable, access this fresh water? Is it directly from the aquifer?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, every drop of our drinking water, you know, in the town of Barnstable through our Hyannis water system comes from that groundwater that's stored beneath our feet, essentially, here on Cape Cod, our sole source aquifer. So Hyannis water system specifically draws water from groundwater wells that are located throughout our service area. We also have other independent water districts and water providers in the town that operate very similarly. So yeah, I mean, the groundwater levels are obviously essential to us, and they are naturally replenished by that rainfall and snowmelt. But we are very fortunate to have this very, you know, highly productive sand and gravel aquifer that does serve as our region's primary drinking water source.
Yeah. So what is the route the water takes from the source to residents and businesses?
Yeah, so specifically at the Hyannis water system, like I mentioned, we draw our water from various groundwater wells, and then that goes, you know, through the ground, ultimately, through pipes to one of the many water treatment facilities that we have through the Hyannis water system. All of our wells are treated at the source for PFAS, as well as going through the full sort of sanitation process that you would expect to, you know, have that drinking water. Hyannis water system's been awarded for the quality of its drinking water as well, which is, you know, pretty remarkable when you look at just the efforts that that system has made. Mm-hmm. And then ultimately from the treatment plants, it's distributed to our customers, you know, to our residents, our visitors, throughout the, you know, water mains and water service lines in our entire network for the town of Barnstable.
So has the prolonged drought created challenges for the town to supply water to residents and businesses?
No, and this is honestly a real common misconception, right, of what does drought status mean, and does that mean that we don't have capacity or we don't have adequate water supply? So one thing I always like to start in terms of clarifying for folks is that we are governed ultimately by the state and by Mass DEP, and when the Cape Cod region reaches certain drought levels, at, you know, as Chief Burke mentioned, we're still in a level two, significant drought status as well as that fire status as well. So when that happens, it triggers, you know, different requirements for us, specifically with the town of Barnstable's Hyannis Water System. It's with our water management permit. It requires us to issue these water conservation notices, and they vary depending upon the level of drought. Being in the level two, they're a little more restrictive at the moment, but that's really, like, I like to tell people it's important to think of that as almost like, think of it like a savings account where you sort of are going to reduce how much you're pulling out and in a certain moment, not because there's an actual an emergency, but just to help to protect that resource so that we're not reactive in a different situation.
So we don't. We don't have concerns that you're going to run out of water then.
No. And specifically at the Hyannis Water System, we have adequate capacity. We have additional capacity. So when we have to issue these water conservation notices, that's the first thing people think is that, you know, we're out of water. And we have the capacity to meet our customer demand, especially during the busy summer season. What's important is that we follow the guidelines that are required of us for our water withdrawal permit through the Water Management Act, and that we help, you know, just protect the resource we have so that there isn't an issue in the future.
Mm-hmm. So then, now, why are towns implementing water restrictions then if there's not a concern that we're going to run out of water?
Ultimately, it comes down to the state requirements of your water management permit, your water withdrawal permit, and the Water Management Act. So in those permits, there is now language, it was updated a few years ago, that essentially says if the state declares a drought, these public water suppliers need to issue water conservation measures. So we're required. If we don't do that, then we're negligent on the requirements of our permit. So it's really important that people understand that it's not to sound an alarm, and they're not necessarily local policies that water districts or water boards are creating. They're actual requirements that are tied to those state drought declarations and the permit that we have to operate our public water system. So it really is kind of this fail-safe that the state has built in to make sure that we are protecting our resources.
So what are the current water restrictions for the town of Barnstable?
So in the town of Barnstable, under a level two significant drought, we do have to reduce how folks use their non-essential outdoor water. So it's not in any type of restriction or conservation on your indoor water use. It's all non-essential outdoor water use restrictions. So outdoor watering is by hand only, and it's restricted to two or fewer days per week right now. Ideally during the hours of 5 p.m. to 9 a.m. So we don't want to see folks out there watering or having their irrigation, you know, peak day when this, it's just going to evaporate into the sun anyway. Washing of vehicles is prohibited except in specific commercial cases, washing of exterior surfaces, again, with some specifications on different use cases, and filling of swimming pools with your on-site water source. Those are really the big ones when you're in a level two. And as we've seen, the Cape Cod region has bounced back and forth between a level one and a level two. So they do ease up as the state eases up their drought restriction as well.
Yeah, and I guess every town you can go onto the website and see what water restrictions happen to be in place at the moment. And I guess it's interesting being, governed by the state regulations here, yet town to town, you can see different restrictions.
Yeah, and that is definitely very difficult in my role as a communicator and trying to educate the community and our residents, because you can even see differences from water district to water district. So not even, like I mentioned, Hyannis Water System is the town of Barnstable's owned and operated water public drinking supply. But we do have other water districts that serve the town of Barnstable. And there are differences from one water district to another. And it really does come down to that water provider's water withdrawal permit and what requirements are in their permit that they need to follow in correlation with drought status.
You're not only confusing for you, Kelly, confusing for Bill. Go, wait, my neighbor who's across the town line can water and I cannot, or something. You know, you can see where it gets confusing for
it's
people.
It's very confusing, yeah.
And so how are the water restrictions enforced?
Yeah, so specifically here in the town of Barnstable and through the Hyannis Water System, it can be difficult to enforce it, but a lot of it comes down to sort of making sure that our staff has eyes on the area. Sometimes it is a little bit of sort of neighbor to neighbor, you know, sort of reporting if you see a issue. But ultimately, there are a series of sort of fines that can be implemented if someone has reoccurring issue with not following the water use restrictions. So it does take a lot of coordination, honestly, with staff, and also just collaboration from the community to make sure that we're all sort of doing the right thing together. But there are, as I mentioned, there are fines that are built in, and we communicate all of this in multiple different platforms, including running ads in the Cape Cod Times, posting on the town website, social media. I mean, this is all part of our requirements. So we have to document all of that communication and send that to Mass DEP, including the breakdown of some of the fines and how we ultimately enforce.
Yeah. I remember last year there was some conversation on Nantucket where folks were just sort of building in the fines into their landscaping budget, right? So so they actually threatened, all right, after three strikes or three different fines, they would turn your water off completely. I don't know if that ever was approved, but I thought, boy, that'll get your attention.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I don't think we've ever had to do that here, thankfully. But ultimately, a lot of it comes down to education and outreach. Yeah. I mean, like any local regulation or any type of policy or enforcement, our first priority in the town is really helping our residents understand these restrictions and the nuances that we talked about, why one water district may have different restrictions or why someone across a town line may have different restrictions. So it really does come down to that education and outreach.
We're talking about drought from several angles this morning. 866-999-4626 is our number. If you have comments or questions, that's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. And we'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking about drought this morning from several angles. We have with us Chris Klonginger, meteorologist and senior scientist at Woods Hole Group, John Burke, the fire chief in Sandwich, and Kelly Calliope, the communications manager for the Barnstable Department of Public Works. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. All right, Chris, it's not uncommon for us to have drier summers, but fall, winter, and spring tend to bring precipitation. So what weather patterns did we experience over the winter that were different than what we typically see?
We had a lot of
I think we have gremlins here playing with our connections to Chris this morning. We'll see if we can get Chris back. Kelly, let me go back to you for a second and ask you, is there a way that we can monitor the level of the aquifer? I'm sure, you know, the commission and things, but can anybody see that?
That's a really great question. So I know that the Cape Cod Commission has a bunch of resources. What I really recommend people use as sort of their source of truth, though, is certainly Mass DEP and the drought status page that they have, because that really gives you a better picture of what's happening, where the impacts are, because it's certainly not just Cape Cod by any means. And it also gives a really good breakdown of what these different drought statuses mean for both residents and businesses. So rather than worry about levels of an aquifer, I would encourage folks to really look at the details and the facts behind the drought status to get the bigger picture of what's going on across the entire Commonwealth, because there's a lot of misconception about Cape Cod versus other places, right, other parts of the Commonwealth. And I feel like people should probably get, again, that sort of bigger picture sense of what's really happening across not just our region, but really the entire state.
Right. All right. So, Chief Burke, South Coast, Cape and Islands, as we said, they're in a level 2 significant drought. Does that get your attention when you're assessing fire risk? You know, what happens when you hear level 2?
Yeah, so definitely on the fire risk, not only the wildfire concerns that we would have, but any building fires that you have where you're going to be using the water supply system, we notify our water district immediately so they can monitor the wells and what the water supply is if they have to turn pumps on. Again, depending on the size of the fire. The other thing we look at is, and Chris mentioned this, when you have the drought, you have that hard kind of burned top layer, mm-hmm. and we get significant rains, we get runoff and we get flooding in areas that normally don't flood. So that can impede our response. And one of the things we've been seeing more frequently is I'll call them mini landslides, where you have that dry top cover that gets washed away, and we're finding debris and dirt and other things in the roadway, in the properties when we're responding that we normally haven't seen in the past. So that's another interesting feature that we have to worry about. So when you hear drought, you immediately think wildfire, which is appropriate, but we have to look at a couple other layers that can occur with drought, being regular building, fire, water supply issues, and the interesting aspects of not only street flooding, but significant flooding that will bring debris into roadways and actually block the storm drains and make the flooding even worse. So those are some of the things that we've seen over the past week and over the past couple months.
Yeah. And we've had a number of red flag warnings this last year. That means we're at elevated risk for wildfire. So what are the conditions that result in the red flag warnings?
So the state, just like water, the state will issue the red flag warnings, and they look at a couple aspects, the drought level, they'll look at the wind speed, they'll look at the relative humidity. So if you have a combination of significant temperatures with decent winds and very low relative humidity, under 30%, that's going to trigger, a red flag warning. And with that, there's no open burning period. So even campfires, state campgrounds will restrict fires. And it happens a half dozen times a year, give or take. But again, with these weather patterns, we're not sure. We could see an increase in that. And again, we want to try to stay ahead of the wildfire risk. And when we have those red flag warning days, we're pretty aggressive in making sure that there's no no chance for a wildfire, and we're aggressive in making sure that people aren't burning.
All right. Let's try Chris again. Chris, all right, that we mentioned not uncommon to have drier summers, but fall, winter, and spring tend to bring that precipitation. Yeah. So what's the weather patterns experience? What's been different than what we typically see?
Hopefully you can hear me now, and it's all worked out.
I hope so.
perfect. So what we were seeing is a wavier jet stream. When the Arctic is warming so quickly, it sends the jet stream equatorward, and that keeps the pattern pretty stagnant. So we're in these patterns. So when it's dry, it's dry, and it's dry for a really long time. Now, what we hope is with El Nino, we should get a decent amount of water this coming winter. Now, that doesn't mean snow. After the snow we had, that didn't amount to a whole lot of water. This round could be pretty wet, and hopefully we could make some progress digging our way out of this drought. That's what we typically see with strong El Nino, so it's a wait and see. But we get into these patterns, though, Mindy, that are stagnant. And, you know, when you take a garden hose and you put a kink in it, water doesn't flow effectively. The same thing happens with our atmosphere. You know, you deal with fluid dynamics, so when you slow that flow, you get stuck in these really dry patterns, and that's exactly what we've been seeing for the last 24 months.
And when we talk about El Nino, explain, because we hear El Nino, El Niña, can you explain what they are and what the differences are?
It's amazing how something so far away can have such a huge impact on the global weather pattern. It's the water temperatures in the equator part of the Pacific. And already we are seeing El Nino conditions, but what this El Nino could turn into is the strongest since 1877.
Wow.
The whole ocean system is really warm, but the 1877 El Nino was incredibly powerful and made droughts worse in some parts of the world, made floods worse in others. So we may see some extreme weather that get even more amplified going into the next 12 to 24 months. So we've already seen it form, Mindy, in the Pacific. Now we're waiting to see just how strong it gets. And literally, it's been off the charts. In fact, NOAA has had to shift the y-axis to show for those warmer anomalies in that part of the Pacific, which is wild, and the first time in my 20-year career I've seen that.
Yeah. So when we're looking at this drought that we're seeing across the state, pretty much, how much precipitation, you know, this isn't obviously something that happens in a storm or two, so how much precipitation do we need to ease that?
Again, 5 to 10 inches, and I know some areas saw 5 inches yesterday, but you can't incorporate that into the math because so much of that ran off into the stormwater system and out into our oceans, right? So we need it gradual, about an inch every week, and that's the only way we get out of this thing. And we need about 5 to 10 weeks worth of a fairly consistent rain cycle to get our way out of this. Right. I don't really see that changing until sometime in the fall and winter, when we traditionally see our wet season that's associated with El Nino. We have a long ways to go. And even though we saw the wet weather yesterday and over the last 24 hours, again, that won't do a whole heck of a lot.
Yeah. You know, I think gardeners in particular can remember a time when we used to have a lot of those little light rains. And now when we get rain, it does seem to be heavier. Are we attributing that to climate change?
1,000%. And actually, a project I'm working on today for my full-time job is looking at some of that pluvial-fluvial flooding increasing in frequency. And we built our systems, our public work systems, on the idea that our climate was stable. So we would get an inch of rain over 24 hours, and maybe we'd get 2 inches over 24 hours. But now we're getting 4-5 inches of rain in 3 to 4 hours. So our stormwater systems can't handle this. And we are seeing an increase in frequency of those extremes, and we're seeing less of the events where we get a gradual, light, steady rain. So that is one of the clear climate signals that we can attribute directly to human-caused climate change, Mindy.
Yeah. And so, Chris, our region typically has relatively high humidity, but we've had a number of periods throughout the past year with humidity levels around 40%. What factors are driving that drier air?
Warmer oceans. Our oceans are running a fever, even though the global surface air temperature may not be at record levels, our oceans are. And each year, they keep getting warmer. So you infuse what we saw with this past heat wave with more moisture, and that's when it's dangerous. You know, we were talking offline with Kelly about parts of the West that get into the triple digits, but it doesn't feel that bad because they don't see the humidity. This is part of the country and all the way down the eastern seaboard where you really have to worry about a warmer atmosphere holding more moisture, and it manifests in those really excessively humid days. And that is where, you know, you have a human health concern. And I'm sure Chief can talk much more about that and an increased number of calls when it gets hot because people just aren't used to that kind of humidity.
Yeah. 866-999-4626 is our number if you have questions. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. How about that, Chief? We had over the 4th of July weekend some pretty high humidity along with those high temperatures. And it got me thinking, too, that, you know, there was a time a lot of people didn't even have air conditioning. We didn't really need it here. Right now, everybody has air conditioning.
Yeah, it was an interesting week, and what made it more interesting, besides the high temperatures, was the power outages.
Right.
So you combine the high heat with power outages, and we opened a cooling center here in Sandwich at the Center for Active Living on Friday. We averaged 5 to 6 people every time we do that. There were over 30.
Wow.
That took advantage of that on Friday, and some of that is due to some of the power loss. But when you have the increased temperatures, and a couple things that we look for, those with breathing difficulty, asthma, we tend to get an uptick in calls for that. But the other interesting aspect is when you have significant heat and the pavement will heat up. Anytime we have somebody falls outside or there's an accident or a bike accident, not only are we checking for multi-system trauma, but burns, actually. Even being on the hot pavement for a short period of time can elicit burns. So we actually pay attention to that as part of our high heat protocol here to make sure patients are thoroughly checked for that also. So it's definitely different. It's been, you know, it's a significant change over my 32 years here at to have to worry about stuff like that now, but that's the reality that we're facing.
Yeah. Kelly, we have a number of people who have wells. Do water restrictions apply to those households?
Yeah, that's a great question, Mindy. No, they typically do not. So the water withdrawal permits that a public water supplier has in order to operate their wells and their drinking water system, those are issued by the state, you know, through DEP. So that is not the same process that someone with a private well would necessarily follow. So we do often get those questions because we do have a portion of our community that are on private wells. So you kind of have to really take a look at your own water usage and make, educated decisions and, you know, maybe adjust your habits and kind of follow. I would recommend at least follow what the town as a whole is doing, but they do not have the same restrictions.
Mm. Well, it's a good reminder that if we're using town water or private well water, all of our drinking water comes from the same place near the aquifer, which only gets recharged from precipitation. I don't know if people with wells think about that. I don't know. Maybe they do. Kelly, thoughts on that?
Yeah. I mean, You're right. I don't know if they necessarily do. And I think this kind of goes back to my earlier point that a huge part of my job is communicating and educating and providing outreach and materials for folks to really learn more, not just about the resources that are available like through the Cape Cod Commission to look at groundwater levels or to learn about our aquifer, but also to point folks to the information that is specific to our town. I always tell folks that, you know, whether you live in an area where you're on a private well or you live in the heart of Hyannis or you live in Kituit or Centerville, regardless of who your water district is, your water provider, we all do use ultimately the same water supply. And unless you're staying at home and you're never leaving and you're never going to, you know, the beach or out to dinner on Main Street or, you know, any one of the number of things that, you know, you can do and visit in our town, you know, we're all impacting the same water source. Mm-hmm. And it shouldn't be this sort of us versus them mentality. It really should be a collective community effort to understand our drinking water source, to understand our aquifer, and also to understand the proactive measures that the state does put in place to protect such a valuable resource.
Yeah. Got an email from Tony on Martha's Vineyard who said, other parts of the country have such a bad drought that water pressure gets too low to flush the toilet. Couldn't that also happen here? If not, why not?
I mean, I suppose it could absolutely happen here, but thankfully, as I mentioned earlier, the Hyannis water system has the capacity to meet all of our customer demand, including during the busy summer season. So even though we're required to issue these water non-essential outdoor water use restrictions, it does not mean that we don't have capacity. It does not mean that we don't have adequate water supply. So it really isn't an issue for us about running out of water. The issue is just responsible water management, meaning how do we as a water provider and as a community plan for droughts and peak summer demand and future needs before they become emergencies, before they become a problem. Yeah. So thankfully we do have adequate capacity. And, you know, without getting into too much specifics about the town of Barnstable, we're constantly looking at adding capacity and making various treatment plant improvements that will significantly expand our capacity in the coming year. So we are being very proactive and looking at the trends and making sure that we further strengthen the reliability of our drinking water system.
Yeah. Chief Burke, describe how the county and town fire chiefs prepare for wildfires. Is there a specific plan in place?
Yes, it's actually an older plan, and we just received grant money to update it. And our district fire warden, Josh Nigro, for the state, kind of oversees that with the county. But the update for that is going to be interesting this cycle because 2012 was the last one. So 13 plus years, it's going to be very interesting to see the changes. And I know in the town of Sandwich, we updated our hazard mitigation plan, and you assign certain levels to risk. And wildfire actually was elevated this time around in our five-year cycle. It moved up to what we call level two. So again, the chiefs all work together with not only the mutual aid system, but the county wildfire prevention plan. And then we have our own action plans within Barnstable County. If there's wildfires in certain sections of the Cape, we have task force groups that will move and provide resources. And again, when you're thinking the Lower Cape from Brewster to Provincetown, you can only get help from one direction, and that's coming east, you know, west to east. So again, we feel very strongly about where we're at. And with this new plan coming online in 2027, I think we'll be that much more prepared.
We're talking about drought. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking about drought from several angles this morning with Chris Klonginger, meteorologist and senior scientist at the Woods Hole Group, John Burke, fire chief in Sandwich, and Kelly Calliope, communications manager at the Barnstable Department of Public Works. We seem to have some issues with our phones this morning, so feel free to shoot us an email with your questions, thepoint@capeandislands.org. And we do have a question from Stephen, who says, has the Cape considered using new technologies to enhance rainfall? Aside from cloud seeding, there are new technologies using ionization that are clean and have shown to increase rainfall or snowfall by 10 to 15% in Colorado and Utah. Would that make a difference to our water table? Anybody know the answer to that? Chris?
I don't. I mean, I know the traditional cloud seeding is only a 1 to 2%. So I would have to research that. But that is an interesting idea. I know there are some concerns with new technology and trying it first before we scale it up into new areas, but I will, you know, next time we chat, I'll do some research on it.
You'll find about that. Chief Burke, are there particular regions or tracts of land on the Cape and Islands that are at a higher risk for fire?
Yeah, specifically parts of the very Lower Cape, the National Seashore area. But more importantly, in our area here, Joint Base Cape Cod, with the extended acreage that it has, the impact range, we've had several large fires there. The base does an excellent job of doing controlled burning, so you may see that in March and April, and burning plots of land out there to make sure we don't have a larger wildfire. But that's really our priority area is Joint Base Cape Cod, where we see the most significant wildfire risk.
Yeah. And I think it's not the only place I think we see the controlled burns, right? And maybe for folks to understand, because I know people see it and they go, what's happening? Talk about how those controlled burns help prevent fires in the future.
Yeah, it's actually the term is prescribed burn. That's an older term, control burn. Okay. So prescribed burning, these are professionals that this is all that they do, and they evaluate the land masses. And Falmouth does some significant prescribed burning in the springtime in the Waucoit area. State parks, these specific plots of land, they will determine that, you know, need some prescribed burning to kind of limit the fire spread. So what it does is it takes the fuels that are there, the old fuels, and burns them and greens it up. So if there was a significant fire, it doesn't completely stop, but it slows the spread of that wildfire due to the prescribed burning that's occurred.
And we also have a lot of pitch pine, oaks, and brush. So I would imagine that type of vegetation also increases our fire risk when it's dry.
Yes, it's interesting because California obviously has significant wildfire risk. The Pine Barrens in New Jersey, Long Island, and Cape Cod are really, when you look at the top five areas for wildfire spread, and it's due to the pitch pine and the scrub oak and you know the tree cover that we have here. So it is interesting. It is and it does contribute. It's like a Christmas tree, right? You have a row of Christmas trees. They're going to burn significantly. They're going to burn hot. And that's what we have here in this region.
Yeah. Now, regionally, we've done a good job of setting aside open space, but it also means that we have larger tracts of undeveloped land that are close to home. So what are some of the challenges of fighting a fire that starts in undeveloped areas without road access or fire hydrants?
So we do have specialty vehicles on the Cape that are very particular to Cape Cod called brush breakers. You'll see these large vehicles with steel bars. We can actually drive to the seat of the fire, drive around it, and try to contain the spread. But these open track land, one of the things that's helped us recently is the use of drones. And the drones can go up very quickly, give us eyes in the sky as to fire direction spread, where what homes are potentially in jeopardy, where we can reassign resources. So that's been an important step operationally for us to be able to do that. But there's a term called urban interface, which we use in the fire service. And we tell people, if you are abutting a large conservation land or open area, to make sure that your property is fire safe, you remove, dead trees, dead limbs. You have a area, a defensible space, they call it, around your property, 50 to 100 yards if possible. And those are just some of the steps you can take if your property does abut those open space areas.
Yeah. And then what about what kinds of management of woods or open space can mitigate that wildfire risk besides the prescribed burns?
Yeah, so again, the removal of shrubs and brush that abut your property, I think, is important. Also, not storing or being very diligent with the storage of waste. So leaves and branches, you don't want to have one giant pile. You want to be able to spread that out. I think that that's important. And then also, getting back to water supply, what kind of water supply do you have at your house, mm-hmm. right? If something were to happen, are you on a hydrant and you're on a well? If you're on and 25% of the town of Sandwich is non-hydrant. So we have to change our response to, wildfires in that area to be able to bring enough water there. We can't rely on the municipal water system to provide us with water. So we have to change our tactics a little bit. So knowing your community and also knowing if you're on a well or municipal water system, that's an important consideration when we talk about wildfire response and prevention.
Yeah. Steve in Yarmouthport says, I recall that overuse of the aquifer in the 1970s because of rapid development caused intrusion of salt water into freshwater on Cape Cod. Is there a danger of that happening again? And if not, why not? Anybody know the answer to that? Is that possible? Chris, could we have an intrusion of salt water into freshwater?
I mean, we're seeing it with rising sea level, but again, in inland, I am unsure of that. But with rising sea level, groundwater also rises, and there have been instances in other parts of the Commonwealth where there has been intrusion into the drinking water supply.
Mm. Kelly, you have any thoughts on that?
I don't, honestly. I can certainly talk to our water supervisor here in Hyannis to see, maybe what his experience was. I don't know if he was here at that time.
Yeah.
But kind of to Chris's point, I mean, we've seen it in other areas of the Commonwealth. So I'm sure there's a possibility.
Yeah. Chief, because we are in a drought and we might have reduced water pressure, how do fire departments work with water departments to ensure there's enough water pressure in those fire hydrants?
Yeah, good question. And it's important to have that relationship with your water district. So one of the things we do here in Sandwich is we do hydrant flow testing, right? So we pick random hydrants in certain neighborhoods, and you'll see the water district out there making sure that there's adequate pressure. And randomly testing that is important. And that gives us an idea. And we have certain sections of town, we know the pressure is a little lighter than in other areas, but that hydrant flow testing is critical, not only for our ISO rating, but, for us to understand that we have the adequate pressure. And the water district does a fantastic job of not only doing that, but maintaining the hydrants. And I just want to mention, if you have a fire hydrant on your property or near your property, we need 3 feet of clearance all around the hydrant. Mm-hmm. Sometimes fences will impede, or people will put, the plantings that'll get close to the hydrant. We do need that adequate space to be able to hook our hoses up. So I just wanted to make a plug on that also.
Yeah, it's important. Chris, I'm just, we talked a little bit about El Nino and El Nina and some of the thoughts going forward. Looking into your crystal ball, any idea at all, like when you look at when we could possibly see drought levels easing in the state? It's going to be a ways off, though, right?
I think it's not until 2027, probably mid-year 2027. And then we shift back to La Nina. That's the long, long range, 18 months out. It appears that way. So don't expect any turnaround anytime soon, unfortunately.
Yeah. It's interesting how the weather patterns, like we're saying, El Nino and El Nino, so far away can impact us. And I always wonder, too, we get a lot of, whether it's the snow or the rain, it seems like it stops at the bridge a lot of times. You hear the forecast and it's like the rest of the state's getting the snow or the rain and it stops at the bridge.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason for it, right? Cape Cod is surrounded by water. We're a peninsula. The islands are islands. They're surrounded by water, and that water temperature is going to be noticeably higher than the surrounding air temperatures, you know, out towards 495 and 128 in the Boston area. So that's usually where there's rain snow lines set up, and it's because of that warming effect of the ocean. So it's not your imagination. A lot of the cards need to be in place. You need kind of that royal flush for us to get a good old-fashioned snowfall now across the Cape and the islands.
Yeah. And then there's something that's, I think it's sort of a new term, this sunny day flooding. It doesn't even have to rain. Tell us what's happening there.
Yeah, it's just the 1 foot of sea level rise that we've seen across the area. Look, we built our society right along the coast. That is what, you know, helps, that's the engine of our economy. But when you have all of our infrastructure there, of course, it's going to be a lot more vulnerable. And now that sea level rise is accelerating, so we get into the fall and especially spring, where some of these tides now cause flooding. And it's more than just a nuisance. It takes a toll on our infrastructure because you have hours and hours underwater or dealing with salt water, and that is corrosive and has and starts to wear the systems. So it does have a cumulative cost more than just, oh, you have to drive through some water, which obviously isn't good for your car. But we are seeing some of these instances, Mindy, double just over the last several decades.
Yeah, it's scary. Kelly, as we mentioned earlier, we are fortunate to be sitting on top of a sole source aquifer that supplies 100% of our drinking water. What would you say to people who think that even in a prolonged drought, we really don't have to worry about access to fresh water? You know, I mean, we're pretty much all vulnerable to contamination, right? If the aquifer gets too low or we have some kind of saltwater intrusion.
Yeah, I mean, I think the important thing to just sort of reinforce is that the Commonwealth is really doing a great job at setting up these proactive measures to protect that resource, and not just for us here in the Cape Cod region, but really across the state. You know, we have a very powerful aquifer, and a lot of folks, again, they'll hear the drought status or they'll hear water conservation restrictions, and they'll assume that that means that we're in a emergency situation right now, when the reality is that we're just trying to reduce unnecessary demand so that we can give the aquifer the time it needs, the opportunity to recover. It does not mean we're in an emergency situation at the moment. And that's like the biggest thing that I really try to just reinforce with folks is that, you know, these are proactive measures that we put into place to ensure that we're not being reactive later on down the line. Because we are very fortunate to have an aquifer that does have the ability to recharge.
Yeah. I'm just thinking too, you know, with all of the pressures we have on water quality, how does the drought play into that? Or does it?
Yeah, I mean, that is a really great question, Mindy. I mean, it certainly is connected, especially when you look at the Cape Cod region. You know, obviously I'm intimately involved in a lot of the wastewater planning and communication behind what we're doing here in Barnstable with our comprehensive wastewater management plan. And ultimately the connection there is that all of this comes down to, it's really two sides of the same coin, protecting our drinking water and protecting our water quality. And the investments that communities across the Cape are making in their water infrastructure and their wastewater infrastructure, they're working in tandem to protect Cape Cod's environment and quality of life. So everyone really does have a role, whether you are a resident, a visitor, in really making sure that we continue to take the steps forward to do what we need to do to protect, you know, our livelihoods here. And I know, you know, again, specific to the town of Barnstable, we have our 30-year comprehensive wastewater management plan. We're already with, you know, year five of our first 10-year phase. We've begun connecting folks to the newly expanded sewer system. But we also have a number of investments that we're making, not just in our wastewater treatment facility, but also in our water system. I mentioned before that we already have adequate capacity, but we're always looking for ways to expand that. So we have a number of new wells coming on. We're in the process of building a new straightway water treatment facility, a treatment plant that adds in a lot of resiliency to the system. allowing us to operate those wells and treat those wells year round, but also just resiliency within the environment, you know, the infrastructure. Mm-hmm. So there is a lot that is being done. And while it can be frustrating to live through some of the construction of some of these projects, ultimately the connection is there between our water and our wastewater. And we're all trying to sort of do the same thing. And that's ultimately protect our aquifer and protect our environment and quality of life here on the Cape.
We have a question from a listener in Falmouth who says, I love the look of a green lawn, but I'm starting to wonder if I should find landscaping that doesn't need watering. Is it time to do that?
Yes.
Yes.
you know, go to one of your local, we have so many great, you know, flower shops across the Cape, and they're so knowledgeable. Find native plants that you can, you know, add much more space for these wildland flowers that are native to the area that can help the ecosystem, but also are a lot more resilient. Right. And it's also a lot less to cut with your lawnmower. So yeah. That is my recommendation for everyone. Go and ask somebody knowledgeable.
I mean, I totally agree with Chris on that too. And it's actually a huge thing that we try to educate folks on is this idea of a Cape Cod lawn, because there's the irrigation side and protecting water supply and water, but also not utilizing fertilizers is huge. So transitioning to that style of a lawn also helps protect our water quality as well.
Yeah. Chief Burke, I wanted to just mention some, and a lot of times the wildfires can be started by lightning, but also it seems like you always hear of a discarded cigarette, right? So this is a time where you hope people put the cigarette out in your car, right? Don't toss it out the window.
Yep. With the extreme dryness, that's one of the things that we look at is fires along the sides of the highway. A lot of times is due to cigarette. The other thing I'll quickly mention is the rail system, right? So the trash train and the Cape Flyer that come on Cape, sometimes the brakes will spark on trains and you'll get small fires all along the tracks. And once we get multiple calls for that, we know it's most likely the train, and we give the, you know, the train a heads up. So those are the two that we see, you know, that are accidental, but can definitely occur.
Yeah, can definitely spread. Just a little more than a minute left. Kelly, tips for water conservation. What do you tell people, you know, who are looking for some tips on water, especially, you know, people who like to garden?
Yeah, absolutely. So the town of Barnstable actually had a great program that we were running. There's some information on our town website about the Great American Rain Barrel program. So I know obviously in periods where we don't have a lot of rain may not be as useful, but the rain barrels are fantastic for, you know, really leveraging that natural resource. But also the Hyannis Water System has an entire suite of different water conservation resources and kits for customers. So things like water conservation, sustainable shower heads, and a variety of other materials that we just hand out to our customers for free to help them sort of proactively take steps to improve their water usage in their home. But also just things like, you know, watering efficiently, fixing leaks, following the seasonal restrictions that are put in place. I mean, all of those things really do add up and make a meaningful difference across the community. And so everyone really does have a role, and we try our best to provide a lot of education and outreach to help folks make those informed decisions and change their behaviors where they can.
All right. Kelly Calliope's communications manager at the Barnstable Department of Public Works, John Burks, the fire chief in Sandwich, and Chris Klunginger, meteorologist and senior scientist at the Woods Hole Group. Thank you all three for being with us. Appreciate your knowledge and insight. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Mindy.
Thanks, Mindy.
Thank you.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by me, Amy Vince, with production assistance from Dan Tridle and Elsa Partan. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.